Senior Focus. Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And it's great to have you with us. And this particular chat session is a catch-up. It's a kind of slotting into place. What's going on out there? What's affecting us? Where are we at with various decision-making going on in society and various issues? Things don't come clear-cut and they don't always come packaged or finished in time for us to make a program about. Some things we follow in depth at various points, but then we have to step back and move on to another topic. And then other times we're able to do a sequence and see something happen at the end of that. Now, at the moment, we've got quite a few balls in the air and we've placed a lot of time and effort on the 10-year budget simply because it was very complex and impossible to do in one program. And that situation, I just want to say we are waiting on the analysis now of the feedback to council. That analysis is being done over a period of 6 weeks, and then the collaboration about what happens next happens with the council itself when the councillors get a summary of that feedback. And then they discuss aspects of decisions to be made at that point. And they have a timetable because by June, I think somewhere towards the end of June, they have to have signed off on their budget so that the rates can be set and all the paperwork prepared. So when the rates bills for the first instalment go out in August, everyone knows what's happening for the whole year ahead. So that's just in case you weren't aware of how it worked, that's just an update. Now, at the same time, there are concerns in the area of finances for seniors. I know there's a lot of concern and angst about balancing budgets on super. Will the winter energy payment remain untouched? And because there seems to be some greyness about that. And it was something that some parties in the election drew attention to it and said they wanted to do away with it, and other parties specifically said they wanted it. So exactly what the coalition has decided on is unclear at this point, but it will obviously be in the budget. So that's something we will want to look out for at the beginning of May when the budget comes out. When the Minister for Seniors was asked in a public meeting in March about how much the super was going to be from the 1st of April, even though it was clear that it was going to be based on a certain criteria, when asked about the criteria, she was unable to give a clear answer and was able to fudge the issues somewhat and say, well, it could be a combo of two different methods of working out what the increase would be. And yet, it was very obvious to anybody who really studies this that it was already going to be what it was going to be. National had a very clear concept of it, and ACT supported that. And there was nothing in the coalition agreement to change that. So we do struggle at times with politicians when they don't always get things right. And if you're wanting to check information like that, it's a really good idea to go to the WINS section of the MSD website, Ministry of Social Development, because they actually have a calendar for all super payments, and they can tell you exactly how much people are getting who live alone, how much people are getting who live with somebody else, a relative or a friend, and someone who is married or in a de facto relationship, what they receive, and so on. So that really you should be in no doubt as to what your entitlement is, and no doubt about how it is likely to change if your circumstances change. That means you can be quite secure. You can look ahead and check these things out. And you can also find out the payment dates for super, exactly when the pension is going to be paid out. Of course, mostly it's fortnightly on a Tuesday, but occasionally, because of holidays and so on, it's paid early. It may be paid on the Friday before. But you can always check this information if you go to that calendar on the website. Now, the third topic is one that we're going to focus on quite a bit over the next month or two, and that's what's happening in the aged care sector, particularly as the shortage of beds and the shortage of staff is becoming a very hot topic in the media. It's commented on a lot about our GP shortages, how many people have long wait times to see a GP, and also the shortage of beds for aged care, particularly dementia beds, and the difficulties now that there are fewer beds available in right across the board in aged care. I mean, it's not just the small providers that are closing up shop, but it's also the bigger providers like the Ryman's and the Oceania's and so on, who are actually reducing the numbers of hospital beds that they are making available within their complexes. They are the only ones building buildings with these beds. The government does not provide these beds within the hospital care system. So it gets very difficult if these large players decide, well, we're not going to invest in this. This is actually not profit-driven for us. We do it as a draw card to encourage people to come into our facilities, knowing that they won't have to transfer to another site. So we'll be able to stay on site and just move to another building if they need that sort of care. It's very attractive to some people, and it makes the decision to move into a retirement village a lot easier. However, as the industry is finding their profit has dropped a lot, they're actually looking at cutting corners and not actually putting so much money into these beds. So the number of beds available is much more reduced, where they often would take people from outside the community and have them come straight into such a bed. Now they are saying, oh, well, we're really reserving them only for residents who are our existing customers. On the topic of aged care, we've had the report from the Aged Care Commissioner, her first report in her role as Commissioner. And considering we haven't had an Aged Care Commissioner before, this is a very significant report. And this requires a program all on its own, and indeed a further follow-up program. So looking at the issues there, one of the key things has been what quality of report we've got, what does it focus on, and what does it not deal with. And that's how we're going to treat that report and how we're going to look into it in depth. But at the moment, it's really important to understand the breadth and depth of the issues in the aged care sector are partly related to our growing ageing population. And we've got this bulge coming through. We've got, in the next 10 years, massive shortages, probably about 13,000 beds short across the country. And that's a conservative estimate. So these kind of issues are not small, they're not insignificant, and they may affect you in time. So that's why we want to make sure we actually do a certain amount of effort in covering these and make sure that we give a comprehensive account. As we've heard in the news over this week, our news media, our journalistic staff, our in-depth reporting and so on is all very much under threat as people lose jobs and as there is not the budget and advertising to sustain these positions. It seems like there are no short-term answers or alternatives. And how will we get information and news about the things that matter? So programs like ours become even more precious. Quite often because of the impact of ageism, where we have a blanket attitude towards not valuing older people. Because of this ageism, we don't get a lot of coverage in the media anyway, and that's one of the reasons this program exists. So I really encourage you, if you know anyone who is interested in these issues, to tune in to us and pick up what's on our website under Senior Focus. It's pretty easy to find the Planet website, planetaudio.org.nz/programs, and just scroll through till you get to S for Senior, and Senior Focus comes up, and you'll be able to select podcasts from previous episodes. You'll be able to look at what's coming up and also look at what is in our archives section. So today I want to talk to you about a book which talks about dealing with sleep problems, and it's a perennial problem, I think, for many people. It's something we can talk about a lot because many of us notice that we're awake in the middle of the night, we're getting up to go to the loo, and then we find it hard to get back to sleep again. When I had a look at some of the research that's out there on sleep, I found that what they call biphasic sleep, sleep in two phases, is quite normal and quite something that human beings have done for centuries, particularly before the Industrial Revolution. It was indeed the norm. And in hunter-gatherer societies, anthropologists have studied this, and they've found that the tribe had to have people up on shifts to make sure everyone stayed safe from predatory animals. So there was this effort put into using this natural sleep rhythm of waking and being up in the night and going back to sleep and putting it to good use for the benefit of everyone. There's also been studies done on people in laboratories, and they found there's been a natural two-phase sleep process evolved through the course of the study. And there are lots and lots of people doing research around this. And one of the interesting problems that is apparent is the relationship between snoring, sleep apnea, where people have breathing issues when they're sleeping, and being overweight. And I thought, when I looked at this particular book, which is 4 Weeks to Better Sleep by Dr. Michael Mosley, I thought when I looked at it, this would be an interesting thing to bring on to our program, because there are a lot of people who are aware of their partner snoring. There are a lot of people who have sleep apnea who don't know they have it, but it is quite a serious risk for heart attack and stroke. And there is a different relationship between people having this and their gender. So whereas 1 in 4 men have sleep apnea, it's only as common as 1 in 10 for women. Now, that seemed to me to be quite a significant difference. Also, the overweight aspect came into view in this book as the author experimented and lost quite a number of kilos, and he found his snoring stopped completely. Also, this is replicated with other studies, and with the sleep apnea, he actually was able to look at the research and then research himself and then be a subject in a laboratory exercise and be monitored by others. So there's a certain amount of objectivity in the writing and in the way he's put it all together. I'm not going to go into all the details, but one of the things that I found interesting was how neck size was a very significant feature in determining why people snore. Because the main reason that most people snore is they're overweight. And apparently, if you measure your neck size, if it's over 16 inches, if you're a woman, or if it's over 17 inches, if you're a man, you're almost certainly a snorer. So you might like to do that yourself, just to just get a handle on this. As we get older and fatter, we snore more. And that's because our throat gets narrower. As the throat muscles get weaker, and our uvula, that's the finger-like bit of tissue that hangs down the back of our throat, that gets floppier. So all these changes mean when we breathe in, the air can't move freely through our nose and throat and into our lungs. So instead, the incoming air makes the surrounding tissues vibrate, which produces that horrendous snoring noise. Now, I just realised also from reading this that restrictions on airflow as you sleep leads to blood oxygen levels falling. Now, this in combination with an increase in blood pressure puts you at risk of having the heart attack. It could even kill you. That happened to the actress Carrie Fisher, who died at age 60 while on a plane. And the coroner commented that the main contributory factors were untreated sleep apnea and a build-up of fatty tissue on the walls of her arteries. So an awful lot of people with sleep apnea are going untreated because they think it's just snoring and that snoring is harmless. I guess not many of us are keen on being told that we're overweight or even considering that we are and that we should do something about it. But if you are looking at insomnia, snoring, and possible sleep apnea, then it is something you will have to look at or make a decision about what you want to do about it, because it will be one of the key things you have to address in order to make a change that's meaningful. I mean, one of the things that is significant is the release of being able to wake up without a headache, not feeling tired during the day and finding it hard to concentrate, not going around feeling exhausted, not carrying such a risk of heart attack and stroke. So I do think it's worthwhile examining a book like this, 4 Weeks to a Better Sleep, A Life-Changing Plan for Deep Sleep, Improved Brain Function and Feeling Great. And this book is published by Simon & Schuster, and you could order it through your local library and get a copy. They'll purchase a copy and bring it in for you. And I think that it will be quite revolutionary, and that will really set a high benchmark for change, because it's so thoroughly researched and it brings together research and concerns at different levels about different issues, but shows how they're related. And rapid weight loss through intermittent fasting is one of the methods that's been promoted by the author. It's what he used to get rid of his snoring. And I would recommend that you delve into this more and look at it carefully. Not everyone can learn and copy from everyone else and do the same and get the same results, because we are different. So yeah, it is something you'll have to investigate and research for yourself. So I'll just go back to our topic earlier, where I was talking about the 10-year budget. And as part of that focus in our programs, we mentioned about the North Harbour Stadium, which is one of the questions in the feedback that the council sought answers on from the public. There has been some concern coming out in the media about it, and Harbour Sport have on their website a petition which you are able to sign and send off. And this is a separate piece of feedback, separate to the actual consultation that council deliberated on earlier, which closed at the end of March. The petition has not yet closed, and it is a worthwhile way of registering your concern if you don't want the stadium sold. It also is a way of expressing your concern currently, as there are 4 stadia proposed to be examined for Auckland with a national focus. And these 4 stadia, 2 on the waterfront, 1 is Mount Eden, and I'm not totally sure about the 3rd one, but 1 is at the Tank Farm, 1 is on the Bledisloe Wharf underwater, and 1 is Mount Eden. So that's 3 I can think of. I think the 3rd one is an eastern, again, eastern focus. It may be Kalor Park. But anyway, there's a lot of work going on in this area, because there are consultants working on drafting a report that looks at the social effects, the environmental effects, the carbon footprint, the suitability over time, the number of people that the stadium would cope with, and whether it's an all-purpose, multi-purpose event venue that can be used for a variety of things, so that it can actually make enough money to cover the expenses. And of course, how it would be financed is another set of questions and investigations that would come later. But certainly on the social issues, environmental and carbon footprint and so on those issues and transport, they will try and rate all of the four stadia, and then they will try to see which one comes out on top, which one has the most pluses. Now, whether that changes what happens to North Harbour Stadium, as North Harbour is not a national stadium most of the time, but it has been for the FIFA World Rugby, Women's Rugby, and it has been for a few other situations where sports events were played, like All Black matches in the past and so on. It has been used at a national level, but it isn't a national stadium. So what its future will be in the context of these other issues arising out of these other proposals, it makes for considerable complexity. And that is why, if you want to sign that petition or make a difference in the future of North Harbour Stadium, I think you should hurry and go onto the Harbour Sport website and let your views be known. Now, next week, I will be interviewing Fiona Tanis, who is a health professional and has a focus on aged care and is very interested in the future of aged care in New Zealand, and has studied the report that I spoke of by the Aged Care Commissioner. So she will be our guest next time, and we have already been putting in the hard yards today, focused on how we will tackle this, and I'm sure you'll find interest and insight when you listen next week. So thank you for your time, and we look forward to having you with us next time.
Together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus, and do note Senior Focus is one word.
Watching you fade.